It is Saturday, August 4th, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, a little bit of technomatic geeks, and of course our geek news, followed by your questions and comments of technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we're covering the Week in Geek News. We're also talking a little bit about being a technomatic geek with two guests. And during the second half of the show, I'll welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll give out our phone numbers again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, I have quite a few geeks today. Miles Elam, Slacker Geek and student.
Good morning.
Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Howdy.
Chris Dumphy, pilot, geek, photographer, adventurer, technomad, and our second technomad, Cherie Vaillard.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
And we also have someone who just ran here from Zianti, John Tracy. We haven't had John on for a while. Hi, John.
Hi.
You actually got here and prepared and everything a long time before any of us.
Yes.
So how long did the run take?
It's about an hour and 45 minutes.
And how many miles?
14.
14 miles. And you're running that regularly?
Down here? No.
No, I mean like 14 miles on a weekend.
Yeah, I'm training for a 50-miler in September.
Man, that's impressive. I barely got out of bed in time and got my kids off. And
I don't want to drive 50 miles most of the time.
That's two marathons.
So basically, you
just
definitely use...
Don't ask me why.
That's
that was my next
Redwood
question. So really, do you run 50 miles right now? Are you up to that? Are you going to 30?
No, are you kidding? It takes like 24 hours to run that long.
Oh, my
gosh. I'm thinking of 100 miles. No, it's you run a long ways, and then you run a long ways the next day, and you just abuse your body until it's used to it.
Do you feel good that you're running this much?
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. Pretty impressive. And, okay, the other thing I wanted to mention, which is kind of geeky, actually, is you're using an iPod Nike device now, which is a pedometer. How's that working for you?
It's not as accurate as I'd like, but it's a cool way to keep track of it. Also, Nike offers challenges on their website, Nike Plus. So I'm in an ultra-distance challenge race around the world. There's 90 people all accumulating mileage together to see how fast we can make it around the world.
So cool.
I may run a lot, but I'm in like 19th place right now.
Of how many people?
80.
That's not bad at all. Okay, so this little thing goes on your shoe, and there's a little receiver that hooks into your iPod, and you have to be listening to music while you run.
No, you don't.
Oh, how do you figure out how to do that?
No, you don't. It has the option of not playing music.
Oh, that's good.
Which is good because I want to conserve battery power so that it lasts for the
whole time. That's right.
You just dial up Sounds of Silence.
I run for about 15 minutes, John, then I get... Oh, I see. Yeah. Sounds. Okay, enough on the running and all that. Let's do some geek news. First one to make eye contact. Chris, okay, you did it first.
I'll see. Some of the most interesting geek news that I ran across is Amazon expanding the services they offer. They're rolling out Amazon's grocery shopping in Seattle, and they're slowly going to bring it out to other cities. And then the other thing Amazon did is released APIs to let developers integrate Amazon's purchasing engine. So, you know, add buy this buttons to your website for whatever your own stuff is, and Amazon will handle the credit card transactions.
Is this relatively new? I thought they'd been doing this for a while.
No, that's brand new.
Oh, that's great.
Just announced in beta this week.
So now when we have books on the show, we can put a button up and get some revenue back?
Well, there's always, that's been around for a long time. This is, let say you sell anything and you just want to not have to deal with having your own relationship with MasterCard and your own credit card processing and your own dealing with fraud. You can just dial into Amazon service, put a button on your site. It doesn't even mention Amazon. They're just providing the service in the back end. And makes it really, really easy for small businesses and small developers to have credit card transactions.
Cool. Thank you for the update on Amazon's web support. I'll go next to Mr. Tracy. Hi, John.
Hi. I wanted to talk a little bit about the there's a study that was done by University in Queensland in Australia talking about particle emissions and laser printers and their health risks. They're equating it to secondhand smoke in the amount of damage it can do to the lungs.
Right, I saw this article as well.
There was another article that was released yesterday. It was on PC World, talking about how there's a company that's refuting that. Hewlett-Packard is refuting.
Hewlett-Packard's fighting back. Yeah. Well, their models were mentioned in this study.
Yes, they were, and they're probably one of the largest printer manufacturers in the world.
The basic concept is that the cartridge, which has all the particle...
releases fine particles. The way it works is you have a drum that's negatively charged with, I think it's 5,000 volts, and then you have this dust that adheres to that drum via static electricity, basically. So when it's being run through, that dust is powdery. If you've ever had a laser printer that's not working and it's not being set, you can actually pull the paper off and you can dust all of the printing off of it. And it's this very fine particulate matter. So the fear is that this particulate matter is being emitted into the office and that people are breathing it in.
And it's equivalent to secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
Now... that study, I had assumed that somebody had taken some printers off the shelf and tested them and found the particulate matter coming out of them. Is that the case?
I don't know enough about how the study was actually done. They said that it was the emission measurements of 58 different printers inside a typical office.
So they did test the emissions.
Yeah, they did. But, you know, a typical office setting.
This ran around UCSC where I work, and quite a few people said that they had gotten rid of powder-based cartridge laser printers. There's some solid-state laser printer types as well. There's other types that don't do this kind of thing. It seems to me a pretty remarkable that companies wouldn't have figured this out. It also seems like it is an enclosed case. You'd think that there'd be filtering systems so you wouldn't have dust coming out of the machine, even at small levels.
I don't think anyone's really done ultra-fine testing like this before.
All right.
On the emissions of it, so it's not really been a concern, but...
So if you have a laser printer, the biggest suggestion around UCSC campus was try not to put laser printers next to people. Try to put them in separate rooms. And makes sense. Besides, they're not exactly loud. And I've got one in my house, and I've got little kids. It's definitely a concern.
But there's no, I don't know, this is one study so far. I'd like to see more data.
All right. Thank you very much, John, for that update. Ryder, hi.
Hi. So I got one for you. Recent study, government study done on IRS employees divulged that over 60% of them were susceptible to social engineering. Social engineering is basically a technique of manipulating people, asking them questions, a series of questions to divulge, get passwords or basically get them to do what you want them to do by,
right.
Getting their confidence. So
one of the first... GeekSpeak shows we had on the show on GeekSpeak that we did on the website, right. Was Kevin Mitnick, who has a great book called The Art of Deception. It's all about social engineering. He's a famous hacker, of course, infamous hacker, I should say.
So they tested about 102 people. 61 of them failed. Somebody came in posing as technical support for the department and asked them to change their password to a temporary password that the person calling knew about. They said only 8 people actually tried to verify this person's identity.
Oh, wow.
So
now, did these people that were calling in, did they know some inside language of the company?
It wasn't really discussed. It was actually done by an oversight office group for the IRS, so they probably did have the ins and outs.
Some inside language that would allow you to understand that they might be working for the company. Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yeah, so, there's some work to be done there.
Yeah, 68% failed. All right, well
60%.
60% failed. Yeah. All right, sorry. Thank you very much, Ryan. Miles, morning.
Good morning. Community broadband. It's been a topic that telecoms don't want us to talk about for quite a while now. Community broadband refers to, a lot of times it's a local community will want to offer internet connectivity. competing with the local telecoms and the like. Sometimes it's come in the form of power over internet over power lines. Other times it's just traditional internet connectivity, cable networks, telephone networks. There is a bill going through the House, going through Congress, called the Community Broadband Act. And currently, the reason why many communities don't offer broadband is because there is a federal ban on the practice.
Why would there be a federal ban on a local community doing broadband?
Because it was perceived as being the government competing with private enterprise. And it was basically lobbying from existing internet providers. And there's been a lot more push to have these community broadband services, one, because people think it should be ubiquitous. A community may want it and just all pool together. In addition to that, there's been a lot of backlash with regard to how slow the U.S. has been with regard to uptake on broadband access and speeds. For example, the often cited stats are Korea being so much faster than we are. And people have brought up the density issue, in other words, that our population density is much lower than a place like Korea or Japan. But that doesn't account for many of our cities, where in Los Angeles and New York and Chicago, they still don't have broadband speeds anywhere near many other countries in the developed world.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a piece of legislation going through Congress that is looking to overturn that ban on municipal broadband. So if you think that municipal broadband is a pretty good idea, by all means, give a shout out to your local Congress critter.
Right now, get this straight, if the city of Santa Cruz wanted to do a local broadband, there's some federal hoops that have to jump through. And basically, they'd be told no from a federal level.
I don't know in particular with regard to Santa Cruz, because I know that there are some communities that are doing it. For example, San Francisco had their Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But that may just refer to wireless that people have been able to do, which is also, I mean, a great thing to do, but that may be limiting the possibilities.
Right.
Because wireless will never be as fast as a wired connection.
Sure.
For example, fiber optic is really where the big speeds are going
to
be.
Miles, I mean, it seems to me, first off, I like the idea of small government. I like the idea of local government making decisions for the people. But there's an argument to say, why should a city start providing internet, because then, or you know, broadband, because then you're talking about tax revenue going to broadband, and only people who can afford computers can actually use the service. So it's kind of an elite service.
That's one. Most people have a computer, and in
yes.
fact, there's a good argument for people having access to the internet,
right.
having a ubiquitous access. There is also the fact that anyone can go to a library
right.
and get internet access. Now, with regard to the government competing, like I said, there have been issues of – right now, for example, I woke up this morning and my cell phone switched – which had said Singular for the last 2 years – just switched over to AT&T. And I fail to see where
the previous rant on AT&T by Miles.
Right, where the competition is. When they say it's going to be killing competition, what competition?
Right.
My choices are AT&T and Comcast.
All right, thank you, Miles. I see where you're coming from. And so if you want to support the idea of municipalities being able to do broadband themselves, write your congressman.
And one more point. With regard to federal access, them dictating what broadband is going to be like, I'm okay with them being left out of the loop, and that's why I like this legislation. A local municipality where you do have a lot more direct access to the goings-on, I think there should be the ability for a community to decide that they want to have a communal broadband versus non. I think it should follow different rules than federal guidelines.
Thank you very much, Miles. Sheree?
Yes, my news comes from the field of neuroscience, where this week a study was released in which doctors have managed to partially rekindle the mind of a man who had been in a minimally conscious state due to brain damage.
I think the headlines have been coma discovery. I mean, it's been a big deal.
It's huge. It was part of an FDA study. He's the first of 12 patients that they're going to be doing this on. And they basically...
How'd they do it?
They implanted electrodes in his thalamus, in his brain, and they've been stimulating them. And within 48 hours, he was able to actually respond to verbal commands. And soon after that, he was actually able to communicate with his friends and family.
How long has this man been in a coma?
He had been in a coma for 6 years.
Wow.
Whoa.
Which is just incredible to be able to bring this back after that.
Is this similar to a pacemaker, where they install a device that...
They're actually electrodes that are being attached deep within the brain, actually to both sides of the thalamus on both sides, and they're actually using stimulators to actually regrow neurons. It's just incredible, and it's going to just be able to improve the quality of hundreds of thousands of patients each year who go through this in-between stage of not being quite permanently vegetative state and not being treatable.
Right, but where there's clearly brain activity, but there's no way to access that brain activity.
Absolutely.
So you're basically shut off from any external functions.
Absolutely, just being able to interact with the family.
So this person's been in a coma for 6 years. They did some – how long have these electrodes been in his head, do you know?
Within 48 hours of them – putting them in, he was starting to have results.
Okay, that's amazing.
Just incredible.
This is like hooking up a reboot button to your brain. Control Alt Delete. He's waking up.
I'm glad I'm not running Windows. Thank you, Sheree, for that news. I'm going to do one more news story. I'm going to take it from John Tracy over here. You got one more before we go into a little techno talk.
If anyone else has another one, I was just going to talk about the Phoenix Lander.
Well, let's talk about
the Phoenix Lander. I miss science conversations on this show.
Space.
The invasion of Mars continues. Another probe has been launched by...
We launched another probe this morning. It's called the Phoenix, which is originally was going to be the... it was a different lander that we were going to launch back in 2000. That got scrapped. But then they took the lander that they were going to launch then. And I think it was going to be part of Mars Global Surveyor. But they dumped the lander part because it was too expensive. So that's why it's called Phoenix, raising from the ashes. Launched this morning... they're going to insert it later into orbit around Mars. It's going to do the scary entry, descent, and landing that the Mars rovers had to go through. And then it's going to land near the near the frozen water in the poles. And it's going to search for life. They're saying it's searching for life, but they're pretty sure they're not going to find any signs of life. So they have to do some real actual science while it's there. So it's got a lot of other missions. It's going to do chemical composition. It's going to do just a whole spectrograph.
Similar
to
what
the
rovers did.
In more depth. Uh-huh. The rovers were more geologists. This is going to be more chemical analysis, finding out what if there is liquid water. How pure of liquid water? What does it contain?
And this is going to be landing similar to how the rovers land with that big ball thing that bounces along?
I don't know the full EDL of it, but yeah, it is going to be doing aerobraking. It is going to be doing the drag chute. It is going to be doing...
When will it reach Mars orbit?
I haven't been able to find that yet.
Really?
It's actually next spring.
Next spring.
Yeah,
okay.
So just over a year.
I know it's 4 million miles away. 422 million miles from here.
So, John, I hope you come on before then, but we definitely come on spring when it reaches orbit.
Okay.
I want you to come back a lot more, actually, John. It's nice to see you.
Actually, John, could you answer a question for me because you are such a space buff? The Mars landers, they were having that storm come up. Right. Has there been any more news on that? I haven't seen.
Yet they're still in the storm. I mean, Martian sandstorms are massive. Last time I checked, but that was Wednesday, so it's been a couple days. There's a massive sandstorm on Mars and sandstorms on Mars go on for a while. I mean, there's nothing to slow them down. And they were worried that they put one of the rovers into hibernation, basically, to conserve as much power as possible because there's not going to be solar power coming in enough to feed it.
Can they boot from just solar panel if their batteries run down completely and then they get solar panel again? Will they come online again?
I don't know.
No, the issue is that part of the power that comes in is used to heat the components.
Oh, right.
And if they get too cold, you're going to have solder cracking because...
Right. So they don't want to freeze to death. They need to keep warm.
You're going to have thermal damage in the batteries is the biggest issue.
Right, but I remember covering the story, 3 weeks ago, something like that. So the storm is still going on.
I can get a more definitive answer on that.
All right, we'll let you do that. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about not living in a traditional home and being a technomatic geek. How's it going for you guys? Go ahead and throw out your URL for us, too.
Sheree and I last time we were here was in February, and we were getting ready to hit the road. I'd been doing it for a year. Sheree was actually put her house up for sale and is, as of May 10th, moved into my little trailer, and now we are traveling together.
Sheree, you sold your house. You meet this guy online. He comes out to Florida. For some reason, you decide to let him in your life. You guys, you sell your house, and now you're nomadic.
Well, I've not actually sold the house yet. The housing market's dead in Florida, so I still have a house for sale. But I decided...
Special discount for KUSP listeners.
And you can see launches from my house in Florida to the space, because it's right by the Space Center. But,
Weren't you saying you actually... You get news on your phone?
Yeah, I get the text messages from NASA telling me I woke up this morning to the launch being going off, to getting notifications of that. So, yeah, it's really cool area of the country to live in.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I had actually been considering going nomadic before full-time, but technology wasn't far enough along for wireless broadband for me to run my business.
So what is your wireless broadband at this point? What are you guys using?
Right now we're using a Sprint EVDO Rev A card that gets us near DSL speeds most of the time.
Is it on the G3 network? Is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what is your business?
I do software development and technology consulting.
And are you able to keep working?
Yes.
Chris, are you making any money?
Yeah, just doing random consulting. We're actually working more and more on partnering on doing consulting work. So that's pretty exciting to not just live together, but work together.
So do you consult and work for small businesses, large business? What do you do?
Small businesses, large businesses, anyone who needs help with how to integrate technology best into their organization.
Okay, so you guys are driving around in a Jeep. And you've got a little trailer.
Yeah, we got solar power. We're actually running biodiesel now, trying to go green for the fuel as much as we can.
Cool.
And
awesome.
You know, enjoying mobile life.
So did you guys drive out from Florida?
Yes.
You have the vehicle here?
The Jeep is here. The trailer right now is parked up in the Bay Area, up in North Bay.
Yeah. Wow. So is it a success for you guys?
I would say absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, so far. It keeps getting better.
What's been the most difficult thing for it? Besides, like, you know, living with a spouse.
The most difficult thing is probably sometimes is chasing connectivity. It's like we were at this amazing free campground up by Fort Bragg, and Shree had to go hike up a trail in the morning to try and get a cell phone signal to download her 30 spam messages.
Nothing like hiking for spam.
Yes. So you get spam. Up there and you're doing the Statue of Liberty pose with your booster antenna trying to get a signal to come down, and you just get 30 spam messages, and it's just
that's so sad. What you should do is before you lose connectivity, you should send yourself a really interesting email.
Yes.
And then you get
yes.
offline, and then later you come back and you're set. So what about phones and stuff? Chris, you used to be our mobile expert working for Palm. You had every phone out there, every mobile device. You were always talking to it. Are you still doing that kind of business?
Yeah, I've actually got a potential gig doing research in that area coming up. It'll end up getting me an iPhone to play with, because I know I don't want an iPhone if it's my own money, because it's not quite good enough yet.
And that's kind of one of parts of where I was going on this. So you wouldn't buy an iPhone with your own money?
It doesn't do certain things that are really important to me. One of them being you can't use an iPhone as a modem to get your laptop online, which is one of the things all the time.
Well, it's also not a very fast connection.
Right. It's a slow connection. It doesn't work as a modem. It doesn't has basic email, doesn't have great email support, but it has a really, really great web browser, and it plays music pretty well, I think, too.
Yeah, it's a really good music player. I mean, it's an iPod, so it's a good music player. But what are you seeing in the mobile network? What are you really hot for right now?
I wish there was a decent phone out there, actually.
Really?
There's this huge void of a good data-centric phone. I want something with a screen, a big, beautiful screen like an iPhone, but with an open development environment like a Palm OS, and but a better OS than Palm OS currently has. So there's no decent data-centric phone out by anyone at the moment.
What are all the geeks using for phones? Miles, what do you got?
I got a Nokia 6230 on AT&T.
And are you happy with it, besides it being on AT&T?
I love the phone. I absolutely love the phone.
Sheree, what you got?
I have the Verizon XV6700.
That's got a big screen.
It's got a big screen. It's actually, I like the form factor of it. I have had a high unreliability factor with this one. This is my third one in a year that they've had to replace just for manufacturing defects.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Me too.
What are you using? John?
Exact same phone, exact same problems.
They're both Windows Mobile, and I still haven't gotten much of a stomach for Windows Mobile.
What's the phone again, the model number?
6700.
Nokia. It looks cool. It's got a little keyboard that pops out.
And it slides out from the side, so it's a little bit bigger keyboard than a BlackBerry.
Right. It's a great form factor. I love the concept of it. I just wish it was more reliable and, Windows Mobile.
I'd like to mention that my Nokia 6230 has now been going for 2.5 years without any problems.
Ryder.
I'm old school. I have a Sony Ericsson T637, which is like a little candy bar thing. It just fits in my coin pocket. Smaller than that.
Smaller than Miles.
Yeah. And it's what, a phone?
Yeah, just a phone.
Just a phone.
Yeah,
just
I had a Treo 650 for work and a Treo 700. I hated them both. It's just too much.
I still have a Treo, but it doesn't really do it for me either.
Yeah.
You're listening to Geek Speak. We're taking calls and questions of technology. I'll give you the phone numbers in just a second. Geek Speak is supported by PreownedCar.com. PreownedCar.com, where anyone could post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car for other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. We are now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology, focusing on technomatic lifestyle, and maybe, I don't know, running. John's doing a lot of running, and we definitely can handle mobile devices and pretty much anything you throw at us. Any question, we can answer. We'll probably be wrong, but we can answer it. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Stay with KOSP for Castle College this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. In the air room, we have Miles, Ryder, Cherie, Chris, John. I'm Lyle Troxell. Join us right now with questions and comments of technology. You can ask us anything you'd like. The phone number's 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. We actually already have phone lines coming in, so let's go ahead and start taking them, because, you know, that's what we're here for. Candy from Ziani, welcome to Geek Speak. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Candy. What's your question?
How are you doing?
Quite well.
Great. Here's what I'm calling about. I'm calling because I've spent about 6 hours on the phone with AOL. I've been having problems, and three other people in my neighborhood have been having problems with AOL. Finally, after about the sixth hour of having trashed everything, they said, oh, you know, we're having a problem with the Northern California servers.
What?
So I just thought this would be really good to point out so that other people don't waste their time like I did. It looks like there's a problem at the meta level, unless you know something else about it. I feel like I got that information from them rather begrudgingly.
Yeah, that sounds a little strange. How long have you been having problems, Dandy?
I've been having problems about 5 days, but the guy said this has been going on for 2 weeks, and they don't have any idea of when they're going to solve it.
Does anyone sound like this is a little strange?
Somebody still using AOL is kind of strange.
Strange.
Good point. Okay, she's a friend of mine. Back off. So, Candy, why are you still using AOL?
So why am I still, you know, we're looking at each other going, and this household going, why are we? We just sort of feel like, God, we got in, what, 20 years ago,
right,
and are either too busy, too lazy, or don't have enough information where we should go. Got a suggestion?
It's interesting because last week, probably one of your answers was, well, it works. I never have any problems. Everything seems to be fine.
Right.
I get to keep my email address. I mean, those are good reasons.
That was it.
Now with it not working so well, not as much. I haven't heard anything about this story. I think it's kind of amazing that a tech would come on and say, we don't know what the problem is, because normally they don't have that kind of honesty.
And that was after hour six.
Hour six.
And having trashed everything twice.
Sounds bad.
Yeah,
I think you should go with a different ISP. I mean, mostly because it's a good thing to move away from AOL, but secondly because they're obviously not helping you out. I'd go with a local shop if you're going to switch.
Cruise.io.
Yeah, sure, they're a good shop. There's also Got.net's another one in town, which is really good.
Huh.
Yeah, switch.
And you go to the local because think locally.
Yeah, that's part of it, but also because you're going to talk to people who you know, and they're in your area, and they're going to know where you live, and they're going to know the problems in your area.
Well, that's great. Well, mostly I just wanted to pass yeah. this on so that other people don't waste time.
Thank you, Tandy. So if you're having problems with AOL, it might not be you. Thank you very much, Tandy,
Thank
for the
you.
Call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're now going to go to Watsonville. Mark, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Quite well. What's your question today?
Hey, I got a question about the Mac OS using Boot Camp. Any takers?
I use
sure,
yes. I have it running right now. I mean, have it on my laptop right now.
Well, the problem with it is it's actually starting fine from the boot camp side, from the Windows side. But on the Mac side, I'm getting the spinning white wheel after attempting to repair the permissions. And it wasn't successful in doing so. So I've attempted to start up off the Tiger startup disk, and I'm still not getting anywhere with pressing down the Option C. The only thing I know to do now is I went over to the Windows side. I can see that you know, the drive is still there on the Mac side, but it's saying it's corrupted in terms of the registry or structural something or other. And I'm not sure what to do next.
All right, geeks, Miles and Chris, I don't run it right now. Got any suggestions?
I haven't run into this problem. I don't.
Are you having any problems on the Windows side? I'm wondering if it's a hardware
issue. No, I'm not having any problems on the Windows side.
So it does sound like a COS, but you can't boot off the Tiger CD.
That's correct.
Hmm. Wait, you can't boot off the Tiger CD?
Nope.
Can you access CDs in Windows? Can you see the Tiger CD in Windows, but you can't boot it? Hmm.
Correct.
And on the Mac side, if you just put the CD in, it sees it, no problem. I mean, not booting off of it, but just if you put it in.
If on the Windows side, it sees it. I can eject it. I can open it up, and the CD is obviously there. But on the Mac side, it won't start up off.
If you shut down the computer completely and you put in the CD, you shut down the computer completely. You boot it up and you hold down the C key. You're not seeing the drive. The optical drive's not booting.
No, see, that's the problem, is that when you set it up on the Mac side, you've got to determine whether it's going to be starting up on the Mac or the Windows side.
There's a way to force it to start off the CD. You put CD in the computer during Windows, then you shut the computer down. Next time you boot it up, you push the power button. Right after you push the power button, you hold the CD key down. Just hold the C key down on your keyboard.
Okay.
That will boot the computer from the C drive. And then you might do a repair on your Windows disk.
From the CD.
Do a repair on the Mac from the CD. You shouldn't, what I'm saying is, if you tell the machine to boot from the CD by holding the C key down, it's not going to even check the hard drive yet. And I don't think anything's in boot camp. I don't think anything's being modified in the BIOS to do boot camp, isn't it? Isn't it just on the hard drive?
Well, boot camp does require a BIOS update when you first install it.
So I guess it's possible that the BIOS update's been corrupted and therefore Mac won't boot.
Is that stored in parameter RAM?
You could definitely zap the PRAM.
Yeah. You might want to start.
Well, first try that. If you haven't tried that, put the CD in, hold the C key down while you boot. That'll boot from the CD. If that doesn't happen, then...
when you boot up the machine, hold down the Command Option P and R key.
Command Option and R, got it.
P and R for parameter RAM. What that's going to do is that's going to... there's a small part of RAM that's kept alive by a little battery inside the computer that keeps track of different things like the date, network settings, things like that.
And if your hands aren't uncomfortable, you're doing it wrong. So you have to do Command Option P and R.
And then your machine's going to boot up. It's going to make the boot up noise, and then it's going to do it again.
Okay.
Go ahead. The superstitious among us do it three times in a row.
Okay,
just to make sure we clear the parameter RAM.
And then you probably will have to change your battery, and there'll be things that there's some data that's lost.
Well, that's beautiful. I hope that's the least of my concerns. So I just want to make sure I don't lose any of my data.
Of course.
No, you won't lose any data.
All right, good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
So when you zap the PRAM, what settings do you lose?
You used to lose time, printer, network settings. It's gotten a lot better so that it actually... I don't know how it does it. It keeps track of the time still. It keeps track of a few other things. But it does clear out a lot of the connection information. So you might lose, what airport is your default, things like that.
All right. All right, from Santa Cruz, we're going to go to Dan. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question today?
I'd like to buy a flash drive, and I noticed there seems to be a range in different places, $79, $115, $119, and for say a 4 gigabyte flash drive. And I'm curious. I don't really know how to compare.
Yeah.
What I'm buying and.
So the flash drive you're talking about is like a USB 2 thumb drive.
Yeah, I use it on a PowerBook.
All right, Miles. I know you've got one you're really happy with, great speeds and everything. What model is it?
There are a couple that I have that I've liked. The Rally.
A little closer, Miles, to the mic.
Yeah, Rally, which is a small black. That's really good for portability. I also have, I'm pulling it out of my pocket now, an exporter.
I should say I go back and forth between the PowerBook at home and a PC, a Dell PC.
That'll be fine. Miles does the same.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what I would recommend is going online, checking the stats for the speeds, because they do vary greatly in speed. So try to find out what speed they are. If they don't tell you what the speed is, probably they're not that good. The better ones will actually tell you how fast they go.
You want to definitely see USB 2 in the description. And then you also want to see faster speeds.
Yeah, you want to see numbers like 20 to 30 megs a second.
Right.
Okay.
Now, so where is he going to find those numbers? Because the manufacturers don't all have them in standard forms. I mean, how do you do that?
Well, like I said, the better ones, the ones that actually are faster, will publish it. They'll put it in a way that you can see it and be sure of what's happening. The ones that don't publish it are the ones that are slower, and that's why they're not publishing it.
Miles, what was the one that you washed in the washing machine?
That's the one I gave to you, the Corsair.
Corsair. That one has been really reliable for me, too.
My girlfriend put mine through the washer as well, and it seemed to do okay. So the Patriot Exporter works as well.
And did the Corsair survive the wash?
Yes, it did. And I'm still using it. And it's
The ones with the rubber outside tend to do pretty well.
And make sure it has a good end cap, something that'll keep the water and dust and stuff out.
Yeah, that's a big thing. The end cap, lots of times they'll put up, these things will go around your neck and still be like a fob connection point where you can attach it to something. Don't have that on the end cap. As much as that's kind of appealing because you can unplug it, it'll fall off it, and then you'll lose your drive.
Right. Now, this is not an open endorsement for people to try it, like dropping it into a glass of water and all that. Don't do that.
You know, when you say that, it sounds so tempting.
Right. Mm-hmm. But don't do that. But it's still better to have those than the ones that are just bare metal.
Yeah.
They do actually have some ones that actually have O-rings and screw tops and, you know, little pillbox-sized.
So you can do extreme sports.
Expect to pay a little more for those, but if you need to protect your data, you know, in extreme conditions, sure.
But the truth is that the speed's the most important thing, and the way to find that out is not by just saying, oh, it's USB 2, they're all the same. They're not. They definitely have transfer rate speeds.
Yeah. And the fastest ones are not necessarily that much more expensive.
Okay, so
I noticed that the Corsair is over $100 at a local electronic shop. Mm-hmm. Is that a reasonable price?
For what size?
4 megabyte.
4 gigabyte?
4 gigabyte, I'm sorry.
I think that's kind of high.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would go with you probably could get it for 70 online.
Okay.
But I don't know. Definitely do some research. Another great way to find out about products like, you know, purchasing something like this is to use Amazon's knowledge base. You know, you go up on Amazon, you look up the model that you're kind of interested in buying somewhere else at a better rate. You see what people are saying about reviews and take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, actually a lot of online vendor sites going there just to see what's going on, like Newegg going up there. Even if you're not going to buy it there, even if you're going to buy it at a local shop, just to find out what's out there and see what people think of it.
And keep in mind, at a local shop, you do get some service.
Right, so, yeah. And knowledge.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are now going to go with, well, that's interesting. There's another Dan. All right. Dan, again, from Santa Cruz, but Dan, too. Hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey. How's it going?
Good. What's your question today, sir?
I just wanted to give some feedback on the iPhone.
Ah, great.
And
are you on the iPhone right now?
Yeah, I'm actually driving to work. But,
Actually, you know what? I'm not going to take a call when you're driving. If you could pull over, we'll keep talking with you. But if not, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm on a earphone.
Sorry, I can't do it.
Really?
Yeah, sorry about that. Nope. Thank you very much for the call. Actually, I'll go ahead and address that real quick. A while ago, years ago, we had the caller call in on a phone and talk to us. I don't know if it was hands-free or not. And then later someone called and said, you know, to promote that idea of someone being focused on the radio and focused on a conversation while you're on the radio, not such a good idea. And I have to agree with it.
Yeah, part of it is, yes, your hands are busy if you have that, and the ears phone takes away that distraction. But the issue is that your focus is on the conversation, which is even more dangerous than if someone is sitting in the car with you, because the person who's sitting in the car with you also sees the road around you and can help and watch out if there's a danger in front of you, whereas we're possibly, you know, 100 miles away.
And really, it just comes down to, I don't want to be in the situation where I'm partially responsible in any way. And until I see a study that says there's no correlation, I'm just going to not take the risk.
I think there have been studies that have said there are
correlations. Yeah.
But if you do find a safe spot calling, because we are interested in hearing some iPhone feedback.
Yeah, we are. And I hate to hang up on you like that, Dan. I'm sorry about that. I hope that you stick with the show and that we're not ticking you off too much. All right, we're going to go to the next call. And this is in Salinas. We have Frank. Frank, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, people. How are you today?
Quite well. What's your question today, sir?
Okay. I wanted to address a statement that one of you made earlier in the program about municipalities providing DSL service. And I think somebody said that, well, there's really no competition in some of these areas, so, you know, why shouldn't or why couldn't we do it? And I would respond to that it's just not the area that government should be in. And if you absolutely had to do it, I guess you could make an exception if there was a sunset provision, like the government would get out of it after a certain amount of time, because technology does improve, and you know there'll be somebody to come along that thinks they can make a profit in that market. Or if the municipality facilitated some sort of a cooperative, you know, just to help them get up and running.
Great. But Frank, thank you very much for these ideas. I appreciate your comments on the matter. Thank you so much.
Can I finish one thing?
Sure, go ahead.
Generally, the government screws up pretty much anything they touch, and they should stay out of it.
Okay, we've got your point. Your phone's cutting out pretty bad. I can barely understand you, but we do have your point that you think that municipalities should stay very minimal in the online arena, or the service-providing arena. Thank you very much for your ideas and suggestions. We are taking calls with questions and comments at technology. We'll answer any phone calls you want. Just be on a landline and have a good reception if you're on a cell phone, and don't be driving. But phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 476-2800. That's in the 831 area code. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Rick Philman is awaiting your calls. In the air room, I'm Lyle Troxell. We have Miles, we have Ryder, we have Cherie, we have Chris, and we have John. We can answer anything. We really can. There's a lot of brains in the room, and I'd welcome you to join us and ask anything you'd like. We're going to go now to Watsonville. Judith in Watsonville, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. I use Macintosh with the Tiger 10.4.10 now. And I, for my browser, I'm trying to use mostly Mozilla Firefox.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I noticed that it doesn't seem to do that Safari does is when I'm typing in a web address, it doesn't autofill the rest of the things that are in my bookmarks. And I didn't know whether you know how to make it do that.
Well, I think what you're seeing in Safari is you've used Safari a lot.
Yeah.
And you've put in lots of URLs, and the history of the URLs you've put in is in Safari. But that same history is not in Firefox. Miles, what do you think?
I think that's definitely I think that's the case. The more, if you use Firefox as your primary browser, it will autocomplete for you.
But so what you want to do is just go to Firefox, type in geekspeak.org, hit enter, visit us, then quit Firefox, open it back up, type a G, and see if it goes to us. John and Chris seem to have interest with this.
One thing to check, if you go open up Firefox and go under Firefox Preferences.
Yes, okay.
Under Privacy, there's a checkbox for remember what I've entered in forms and search bar.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that's checked, otherwise it won't.
In which place you go on, I have it opened right now, the Preferences, to Privacy. Okay.
Exactly, yeah, under Privacy and under History, you'll see remember what I've entered in forms.
But I think that's a different bit of data
that's collecting. They have that checked.
Okay.
So it is then cataloging what you've got, and as long as you're not clearing the history of it, and as long as the history is not.
Okay, well, so maybe there's a thing that says always clear my private data when I close Firefox. Should I not? That's not checked.
That's
right,
good.
That's okay. Correct. If you want this functionality, it's not the search bar in forms. It's the remember visited pages for the last number of days.
Oh,
that's what brings.
It seems like it doesn't take things from my
address,
bookmarks.
Do you have bookmarks in Firefox?
I have a whole slew. I imported. You can automatically import all your Safari bookmarks to Firefox.
Well, does anyone know? I don't use Safari a lot, but when you have bookmarks in Safari, does it autocomplete based on the bookmarks, not just your history? Because if that's the case, is that the case?
Yeah.
Well, I was unaware of that.
I was unaware of that too. That's a good feature.
Yeah, it's a very good feature.
That there's a Firefox plugin that will do that. Can one of the geeks with a Mac check that? Just open Safari, make a new bookmark that you don't visit, and see if it works. Well, the next question I have for you, why switch away from Safari?
Well, I like in Firefox, one of the things I like, you can have different browsers. Like you can have, instead of Google, you can put, you know, Dogpile, or you met right up in the section.
Or
I like
search
that.
Engine. Yeah.
There were a few other things that I really liked about Firefox.
Okay.
And so I use both of them, somewhat. But
John, you have some.
And the other
feedback.
Thing I like about Firefox is you can, when it opens, you can have it come back to the pages you were looking at yesterday.
You can do that with Firefox as well.
You mean Safari.
Oh.
Can you do that with Safari?
No, I don't think you can do it with Safari.
You can do it with Firefox. So there's just a few things that I found. Oh, definitely. This is nice. I like this.
John, you have a suggestion for Judith?
No suggestion. No, I was just going to answer the question. The autocomplete for the URLs is not based on bookmarks. It's just based on pages recently visited.
So the more you use Firefox,
the more it will stack up.
Yep. Yeah. Thank you very much, Judith, for the call.
Okay, thank you.
And from Boulder Creek, we have Craig on. Craig, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi.
I was too late to call in last week, and the guy called in about reception on FM.
Mm-hmm.
And, Lyle, I'm the one that, when you're up on Alba, took the mast off your house back in the 70s.
Oh, cool.
But I was with the Ham Radio Club there in Santa Cruz and stuff. But for him, he said he had a mast, and they had a strong directional antenna,
mm-hmm.
which is both good and bad. It picks up more, but if you're not aimed at the right spot, it's weaker. So I suggest that he goes to like Radio Shack or Santa Cruz Electronics and gets a rotor to put on the top of his mast, and they get a short piece to go above the rotor to hook to put the antenna on, and he could get a preamp and run some coax from that down to his set, and then he can turn the antenna around, and there's good to get the type that you can read which direction it's aimed.
Right.
And then he can mark it, which stations come in at which point
and actually
on the
change
rotor.
It, and change it based on which station he's listening to.
So he can tune to the station he wants and then just turn the antenna around till it comes in the strongest. It'll probably come in two or three, four different places on there. Just pick the best one where he has.
That's a really good idea. So basically, you these rotary devices, how much is it like a whole set like that?
Rotary runs from about, about $40 to about $60 or so once you get up the real heavy stuff. But he won't need a real heavy one.
That's not bad. So the real thing also is to make sure that the rotary controls not just go left, go right. It actually points to where it goes.
You can't really market on that well.
Now, this makes a lot of sense because he did have directional antenna and he was getting some receptions from some stations and not from the others. And really, what you're saying is those antennas that are transmitting are different locations and you need with a directional antenna to aim them specifically.
At the place. And like I said, with ghosting and stuff, it comes in different places, bouncing off hills and stuff. And he can set it to the station he wants and then just turn it to, he gets the strongest signal.
The other thing to do possibly is to get rid of the directional antenna. If he's in a flat area, having directional antenna, he might not even need that.
He might not. You can try it without it.
Yeah.
And the other thing I said was the preamp up there, which will give him about 10 times the signal strength he's got now, which will bring weak stations in stronger.
All right. Craig, thank you so much for the call.
Okay.
So that was about last week's show, which we talked a little bit, and we had to take him. Well, and I think we handled his problem pretty well. But, yeah, I think that feedback from Craig's quite good. Directional antennas are directional, and you need to move them based on which station you want to listen to. It's interesting that Craig brings up the story that I remember when I was a kid. I went up to connect this antenna that we had a big mast on our three-story house. And I'm hanging off this mast and up on this roof, and I think I was barefoot, which is a no-no. And I've got the cable, and I want to put on a new cable to the antenna to our new FM. And the cable, I didn't have wire clippers, so I've got a lighter, and I'm melting the shielding off of it. And my arm's hooked around the mast, and I'm leaning on a building on top of a roof, and I've got this thing, and I'm melting it. And a drop of the hot plastic lands on my hand, burns me. I still have a scar from it. And, of course, my instant reaction is to throw my hand away and almost died. So when you're doing roof work, have good clippers with you. All right, we're going to take a call from Robin in Santa Cruz. Robin, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello?
Hello. What's your question today, Robin?
What's that?
What's your question today?
My question is about Vista and why so many things are unavailable even with administrator privileges. There are so many folders where access is denied.
Anybody running Vista?
Vista is very paranoid. It tries to lock down even administrators to do lots of things. I kind of consider Vista still in the better, best avoided place, AOL.
Okay, but that doesn't help Robin very much because she's running Vista.
Right.
So can she? I'm assuming that Vista does the same thing that XP did. You know, turns off certain folders you're not really supposed to have access to, and makes it a little more difficult to get access to.
It's a lot worse.
Yeah.
So are you saying that you're not getting prompted? You know, with a lot of the activities, you get everything grays out. You get a little authentication box and verify that you want to take action on that. You're not getting any pop-ups like that?
You are. You get pop-ups. You get, for instance, I was trying to get into just the documents and settings folder, and it just says access is denied. I mean, you can, in some cases, go ahead and go through the permissions and take ownership of a folder, but that isn't always effective either.
Hmm. Unfortunately, our Vista expert is not here. He's okay. We didn't have enough chairs for Sean today. So maybe next week we'll answer this. If you'd like to send us an email, we're having some trouble with email, you might want to go to geekspeak.org and give us a message and see if we can help you out over the email. Thank you so much for the call.
Sounds great. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, Vista is a little bit paranoid, I would say. Not in a bad way, necessarily. Okay.
Well, that sounds weird. Like, I mean, it sounds like, you know, administrative rights, there's no permission set for whatever she's trying to access, but turning on the access rights and not being able to do that sounds very funky.
Yeah, it is. All right, we have time for one more news story. I'm not going to invite anybody to calls because I think we're out of those. But we've got one more news story somebody wanted to cover.
I wanted to finish up on the Mars. Oh, sorry. I wanted to finish up on the Mars rover.
Yeah, please do.
I haven't found any definitive information about what's going on right now. Is that better? Can you hear me now? The dust storms are over, but the problem with it is the settled dust has dropped the voltage from, it's normally around 700 watts is how much the solar panels bring in. They're bringing in about 140 watts now, which is enough to keep the heaters going. So unless there's some swirling winds that blow the dust off the solar panels, it's kind of in park mode.
Ah, so it's still sending a signal back. It's still warm.
Every 3 days it's saying, yep, I'm still here. Yep, I'm still here. Yep, I'm still here.
And eventually it'll say, yes, I'm still here, and I've got enough power to do other things. Hopefully.
Talk about a directional antenna trying to get a signal from Mars. Like, I mean, just wrap your head around that for a second. That we're getting...
Ouch.
Well, one of the cool things is they used Mars Reconnaissance Observer, which is a floating observatory around Mars. Floating, okay. It's a satellite around Mars that has
an orbiting
set of cameras. Falling with Mars? Okay. That's been taking pictures of the area. And they have, if you go up to a NASA's site and go to the Mars rover site, it has pictures of before the dust storm and after the dust storm from MRO's perspective. It's pretty dramatic. The amount of change.
Cool. Mars changes quite a bit with storms.
You know, when you don't have plant life to anchor the topsoil, yeah, you get a lot of big dust storms. We found that out in the 20s, didn't we?
I think that's right. We did find that out. Well, thank you very much for that update on the news. This is GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, writer of books, John Tracy, Chris Dunphy, and a special happy birthday, Cherie, and thanks for being on GeekSpeak today. Answering the phones, Rick Philman, as every week. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Next week on GeekSpeak, we're going to be handling, let me see if I can find the write-up. We're going to be talking about running a colo or a data center. We're going to have Derek Weiss on. He's the president and CEO of GNI Global NetOptics, and he's going to talk to us about NOx. Specifically, he's going to tell us a little bit about what happened on July 24th at the power outage in San Francisco and why it affected so many websites and how data providing centers handle that kind of issues and what didn't happen and what will happen in the future, I'm sure. So that's next week. We're talking about data center business with Derek Weiss, and we'll also be taking your calls and questions as we do every week here on GeekSpeak. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto. We are on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by PreOwnedCar.com. PreOwnedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicles for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information is available at PreOwnedCar.com.